Hello?
Well, guess who called me the other day? A TV reporter from down in L.A. He said he heard a song a little while ago on some obscure talk radio show. Then he asked if I was the writer of the music I just mentioned in the lyrics above. But now that I look back at the wisdom I lacked, I probably never should have said too much. And as he pressured me to share with him a word or two, and we carried on our telephonic interview, a wee still voice inside my head was saying, "You're gonna be sorry for every word you just said." Then sure enough, right after he was through, he slandered and defamed me on the evening news. I should have listened instead to the voice inside my head, 'cause here's what it said to me. You don't go casting your pearls before swine, 'cause they're only gonna trample them into the muck and grime. And when they're through, they'll turn on you and burn you every time. So don't go casting your pearls before swine. And when I went off to sing a song in Washington, I was hounded by those dirty dogs at CNN, who said they wanted to do a favor for me by giving me a little free publicity. I should have never let them turn their lime cameras on, 'cause when the cutting and the editing was finally done, they put horns on my head by changing everything I said. They made me sound like the devil's own son. So you don't go casting your pearls before swine, only gonna trample them into the muck and grime. And when they're through, they'll turn on you and smear you every time. So don't go casting your pearls before swine. Now there's ABC, and then there's NBC, and CBS, and CNN, the New York Times, the LA Times, and the Washington Post are just a few of the most porkiest people. NBC called to let me know they were gonna use the music on a TV show. They were gonna use the song I wrote about the wrong that happened up in Ruby Ridge, Idaho. But then they got a threatening letter from the ADL that said, "You use that kind of music, we'll make your life hell." Then they dropped me off the show, and now I think I know why the music doesn't sell that well. So you don't go casting your pearls before swine, 'cause they're only gonna trample them into the muck and grime. And when they're through, they'll turn on you and rip you every time. So don't go casting your pearls before swine. No, you don't go casting your pearls before swine. I said you don't go casting your pearls to them sanctimonious media boys and girls. You don't go casting your pearls before swine.
Dear Lord, now I've got this problem. Seems it increases every day. Seems the more that I try to follow you, the more the price that I pay. Now I've got friends who will sit and judge me just for being your kind of man. Out of spite, some bite and backstab me just for doing the best I can. Take Brother Bill. Now he is such a gossip. From what I hear, it's widely known. And Brother Bob, why, he's so fault-finding, I had to call him on it right over the phone. Pastor Lieberwitz, he's a hypocrite. Lord, won't you make him see his sins? And won't you save me from the likes of those who've call themselves Christians. Lord, won't you save me from a few of your followers? I can feel them creeping up and closing in on me. Lord, won't you save me from a few of your followers, and take the log out of our eyes so we might see. Now you've saved me from temptation and all the wiles of worldly wealth, from the trials and the tribulations I usually brought upon myself. And you've rescued me from conspiracies that were planned to harm and hurt. Now won't you save me from the elders who conspire down at my church? Lord, won't you save me from a few of your followers?
And good morning, folks, and welcome to Coffee with the Radio Ranch Wranglers here on the Scriptures for America Worldwide Broadcasting Network. We're coming to you live this morning, August 8th, 2026. I'll bring the guys on the line. Good morning, men.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And thanks for being here, guys. Will, would you start us off with a word of prayer this morning, please, sir?
You bet. Father God in heaven, Lord, we thank you for this Saturday morning. Lord, we thank you for the opportunity to gather in your name, O Lord, and talk about the events of the day. And Lord, we pray for our people, the remnant, no matter where they may be, O God, that your hand of mercy and your ever-reaching security will just surround them, Lord, and keep them safe from the evils and ills of this old world. And Lord, we thank you for this ministry and its reach. And Father God, we can continue to pray blessings over Jason and the ministry. And Lord, we just thank you for the opportunity to be here. We ask it in your name. Amen.
Amen. Well, there is a lot of stuff to talk about this morning. Where would you men like to start?
Well, there's a worldwide stuff, Will, huh? Russia?
Oh. Yeah, there's a, you know, Russia's been quiet, and I shouldn't say that. It's just this Iran thing has, I guess, overshadowed it in the last several weeks, but there's an interesting intelligence report that's coming out, and it's an interesting time frame to me. It's just another bipolar kind of thing that there is it's a U.S. intelligence report that has come out that they're saying Russia, Vladimir Putin, may test the NATO's alliance strength with an attack on an allied country, a NATO country. And they're saying it could happen as early as this fall. And they're saying it may be a land invasion. And this is all coming out of the U.S. intelligence reports. And then they go on to say, but it may be a limited assault. So it may be a cyber attack, or it could be a land invasion or a military incursion. And if you read more into the intelligence report, it then goes on to say, it could be within the next few weeks going into fall, or it may be between now and sometime in 2029.
So it's roll the dice. We don't know what's going to happen.
Right. It's funny because, you know, the media coverage, the few news stories that are out here about this is, you know, the headlines are, Russia could attack NATO as early as this fall, but then when you read into it, it may be in the next 2.5 years.
Well, and we've talked about this before on here. If you look at some previous, you know, broadcasts, but
oh yeah,
we've talked about the fact that you know, the Ukraine is false flag Poland. That the Ukraine blew up the pipeline, you know, the gas pipeline, and blamed it on what, Russia, that you know, we've seen all these different false flags. So doesn't this kind of sound like they're setting up for? We're getting ready to blame Russia for the next thing that we do. I mean, to me, that's what this sounds like. So it's whose fault? It's like we need a scapegoat. Oh, it's Russia. You know, so that's kind of what I see. I mean,
100%. And, you know, we've talked about quite a bit here about these NATO countries, you know, your Germany, your France, and those Austria and those kind of countries. They've all come out and are preparing their citizens, you know, the Great Britain and England, you know, that prepare for a NATO war, you know, prepare for a war like your grandfather's experienced. And the common enemy between all of these NATO states is Russia. So, you know, is this a self-fulfilling prophecy? You know, they keep telling their people to prepare for war, and now these intelligence reports are coming out saying Russia is preparing some kind of invasion. I don't know if it's true. I think you guys know as well as I do. A lot of times this is priming the pump is what this is. You know, they're putting these news stories out there. They're leaking these intelligence reports, because they're telling us this is what's coming, but it doesn't necessarily mean that, what they're telling us is coming is actual facts. You know, there may be some kind of, we may see Russia move into a NATO country. But will it be an invasion or will it be a defensive posture because of, like you were talking about, Tim, some sort of false flag attack? I don't know.
Yeah. I look at a lot of these things and I don't think, just my opinion based on what I see, Russia has never made any bones about wanting to go anywhere else. They've got an issue in the Ukraine and the Crimea area over there that they have been dealing with. And the rest of the world is like jumping in, or maybe not the rest of it, but some portions of the rest of the world are jumping in there and really blowing things out of proportion. And I personally think, at its finest, this whole thing's just a money laundering operation. I mean, I think it's just a way to move money, material, and arms around wherever and to bring about this continuing state of chaos and upset in the world to fund certain, what do you want to call them, super elite groups or powers in the world. I mean, I think that's what we're seeing here. And this is just a vehicle that gets them down the road somehow, you know. So, I don't think they're not interested in a good outcome. They're interested in the continuation of it. And their grist mill will grind. And I think that, NATO or not NATO, the Ukraine continues to attack Russia. Nobody talks about that, but these balloon attacks with drones into Russia has, that's a big deal. I mean, that's continuing. That's just, I don't know. Is that like poking the bear? I mean, they continue to do that. They're putting these balloons on. I don't know if anybody knows about that. Maybe I'm sure you guys do, but they're hanging drones off balloons, and the winds blow primarily from the Ukraine into Russia off of that area over there. And they can hang a drone on there pre-programmed without it running and float it right into the deepest part of it and cut it loose and do damage with it because the drone doesn't have that much range. So it shows up at its target point with a full charge, you know. So as far as the battery goes and as far as its programming and as far as its armament. But so it's kind of like an aircraft carrier for drones. But
very, very low tech, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But at any rate, these things are going on. Nobody really talks about that. They're taking it into areas that are basically urban or different things like that and wreaking havoc. So what do you expect a country to do, or how do you expect them to act when that goes on? I mean, are things going to escalate? you know. So, yeah.
Well, I'd like to jump back to the, you know, we were talking about the Nord Stream pipeline, and, you know, everyone blamed Russia in that at the beginning, and we know, we absolutely know it wasn't Russia. And it never made sense that it was Russia anyways, because it was the Russian gas that was going on to the continental Europe. You know, why would they cut off their own money supply? They would never do that. But there's been a couple of incidences, and I failed to put this in the show notes, but there's a couple incidences that have happened, and I don't know if you guys heard about it or not, but there's also a little bit of breaking news on this. Did you hear about the drone strike in Westphalia, Germany, at the Leipzig airport? Did anyone hear about that?
I did not.
It didn't get a lot of media coverage. Yeah, it did not get a lot of media coverage at all. A few days ago, it was Tuesday at the Leipzig Halle airport in Germany. There was a drone strike, and it hit an airplane. It hit an airplane, and the key on this is this isn't like Denver International. What it actually is, this airport is a NATO logistics hub. So this is an airport that deals mainly with NATO nations that are moving, like you were talking about, Tim, you know, moving these weapons of war and the supplies of war through the NATO countries. There's a lot of suspicion that even though the Ukraine is not in NATO officially, that there are NATO countries assisting. And we know that. We know the United States has assisted, Germany's assisted, you know, Great Britain has assisted in this Ukrainian effort. So one of the airplanes that was hit was a Ukrainian Antonov AN-124 cargo airplane, and a drone hit it. And don't know what it was carrying. It was on the ground. It had not taken off at this time. But that happened on Tuesday. Well, this just hit 35 minutes ago, that a drone has exploded in Bulgaria near the Trans-Balkan gas pipeline. I'm just going through this real fast. Like, this is 35 minutes old. This is, I just had it, I apologize. This is a pipeline that moves, gas, from the Ukraine to Turkey. And it's a gas pipeline. It crosses over the Romanian border, through Bulgaria, and it moves, gas into Turkey. So the question now becomes, is this Russia doing that? Or is it the false flag, Tim, that you were just talking about? And I actually misspoke when I said that it moves Ukrainian gas. It's actually Russian gas. It's Russian natural gas that's getting moved into Turkey on this pipeline. It is a Russian pipeline that they use to move gas into Turkey and then into other parts of that region. Right. So the question becomes, is this another Nord Stream?
Yeah. And I would say highly likely. Yeah, right? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, well, highly likely.
And I'm wondering.
Go ahead, Jason.
Did you hear about the Lindsey Graham sanctions bill that just got passed? So it just passed. Legislation will give President Trump power to apply 100% tariffs on countries buying Russian oil. And I mean, I don't know. I was reading through this. I just was reading through it this morning, and it's like, I don't understand how anybody can think this is a good deal. It says the U.S. Senate has approved a bill allowing President Trump to impose 100% tariffs on the largest purchasers of Russian oil and gas. The bill was the brainchild of Senator Lindsey Graham, who tried multiple times to pass it before he died last month. The bill, titled the Lindsey Graham Sanctions, Russian and Iran Act of 2026 passed the Senate by 86 votes to 11 on Friday, with Graham's sister Darlene, who was appointed to a seat, reading out the results. The only person, the only Republican that voted against it was Rand Paul.
Wow.
But 100% tariffs on, I mean, how can, I don't know. I read through this thing a couple, and I've read a couple different things on it, but I don't understand how we can put tariffs on other countries that are buying Russian oil and gas.
I was sitting here thinking the same thing.
I mean,
why is that any?
Does that make? I mean, does that make any sense to anybody? It's like how? I mean, it's like okay, how? I mean, what? How and why and I mean, that just doesn't make sense to me. But I don't know. And I was hoping maybe one of you guys could explain that to me.
It's hard to explain nonsense, Jason. But that's
Well, I'm just wondering, with that going on, if maybe that's what, I mean, we're talking about this gas line that's going in there, and it's like, okay, so it's a gas line going from Russia to somewhere else, and we're going to put 100% tariffs on it. It's like, who gives you the right to do that? You know, that's like, you know, Tim is selling Will a Glock, and... you know, I want 100% of the commission off of that. I mean, it doesn't work.
Yep, it's certainly not. It's certainly obtuse. I mean, the other thing is obviously, where are those people going to get their oil and gas from? I mean, obviously, winter's coming up. You know, so we've got heating and energy use issues. So you're just going to this sounds like an incitement measure, like, you know, let's
absolutely
incite people. And then it'll turn around in a few weeks. It'll be, well, they're withholding necessary heat and natural gas and everything from other European countries. And it's like, no, they're really not. Number one, you're putting a tariff on these countries in order to prevent them from buying it. And if they don't want to sell gas or oil to Turkey, all they have to do is turn a valve at the pumping station or shut off a pump. You know, they don't have to blow up their pipeline. I mean, you know, that's the other thing that it's like, you know, when you want to shut the water off to your garden, you don't go out there and cut the hose. You just shut the valve off. Yeah. You know? So,
well,
it's like,
go ahead.
No, that's it. I mean,
I don't know. One of the things that I don't know, I guess it's worth saying, Sharon, is that Richard Blumenthal, he was the co-sponsor of this bill. And one of the things that he put in there was, today President Zelensky is watching from Ukraine and Putin is watching from Moscow. And I would like to think that Lindsey Graham is watching too. And, I got news for you, but he's not watching from where he is.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's go to the phone lines. We got a caller on the line. Hello, caller.
Hey, Jason, can you hear me?
I can hear you, Warren. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I was just going to let you know that I don't know what's happening in other areas, but you keep cutting out up here in Wisconsin, and so you still got those wires out there?
Yeah, we do, and we are smoky as can be. Yeah, it sounds
maybe
like
that's what's happening while you're cutting out.
See, yeah, it could be. Done. I've been monitoring it throughout the last week, and it's been doing good. Will, has it been good on your end?
Yeah, it's been good down here in Texas. It wasn't that great on Wednesday, but Thursday, Friday, today, it's been fine.
Okay.
Well, yesterday and last night, it was pretty smoky up here. We need rain real bad yet, so.
Yeah, we do too.
I just want to call again, you know, tell you that. And it sounds like, you know, Trump's finally admitting that we're running out of missiles. You know, I think what's going to happen, Iran's smart enough to sit back and wait till we're out of bullets and then attack us.
Yeah, if not them, somebody. I mean, it's not a real good place to be.
Right, well, you can't defend yourself. But that's just my comment. Is I just want to let you know that, you know, if,
right.
if somebody else calls in, you're having some kind of signal troubles today.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it. Okay. Yeah, thanks.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Yeah, I don't know. Let us know how the reception is. You know, it's one of those things is we can't fix it if we don't know that there is a problem. So, you know, if you're experiencing issues, let me know. Shoot me an email, text, give us a phone call. Phone number to call in is 970-224-4203. We'd like to hear from you. Anyway, we'll go back to you.
Can I make a comment on Richard Blumenthal?
Yes, please do.
So we can all guess Mr. Blumenthal's affiliation just by his name, but I just want to point out a couple things. Richard Blumenthal is a senator from Connecticut, but with Warren calling in, it just reminded me. Richard Blumenthal is a liar. And that's not just because he's a senator or because he's a Jew. Richard Blumenthal claimed to be a Vietnam veteran, openly, during the Afghanistan, campaigns that we had in the early 2000s and also in Iraq. He regularly, not once, not twice, but regularly when he was being interviewed would reference that it reminds him of when he served in Vietnam. Well, Richard Blumenthal never served in Vietnam. Richard Blumenthal received several education deferments during the draft in Vietnam, and ultimately he enlisted in the United States Marine Corps Reserves and never deployed to Vietnam. As a matter of fact, he served stateside in New York. He is not a Vietnam veteran, but he has claimed that many times. Several people have pointed this out. He's never really detracted his statement. He's a liar, and he's also a guy that, he's a lawyer, and he served for many years as chief counsel for the NAACP. And one of his best friends was Morris Deeks.
Really?
And yes. Richard Blumenthal is a piece of trash. And the funny thing is, you know, long time Democrat, one of his best friends in the Senate was Lindsey Graham. And he is just a piece of trash. So when you mentioned Richard Blumenthal, he was the guy who was sponsoring this bill or whatever. I just thought, well, I thought a lot of things I'm not going to say on air, but Richard Blumenthal is a terrible human being.
Huh. And there's a lot of people that think he's a queer as well.
Well, and I was not going to bring that up, but one of the things that was rumored for many, many years of why he and Lindsey Graham were such good friends is probably because of right. that very thing.
That's what, well, I mean, when you said, and I've read that too, and I mean, there was reports of him and Morris Deeds being buddies and Graham and as well. So, I mean, I'm not saying that I know that for a fact or not, but it kind of fits.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, I know there's some other things we can talk about with Russia, but all of us follow the news. You know, we keep track of things. Let me ask you guys a question. When was the last time you saw any news story or media coverage of the state of Israel being favorable toward Russia in any way?
We haven't.
Ever.
Not really.
No, yeah.
I got to thinking about that this morning of, just recently, you know, Netanyahu and what's his name, Zelensky, they're at the White House at the same time with Trump. And I started thinking about that, thinking, I can't recall from any media outlet a favorable news story where Israel is friendly in any way toward Russia, or vice versa, with Russia and Israel. I just was going to ask you guys, that's kind of a curveball, but I can't remember anything.
The last ones that I can remember would take us clear back into the Soviet regime. I mean, that would, I can't really give you a concrete example from that time frame, but there were, you know, some, but since the Federation days, nothing. Yeah. As a matter of fact,
I would agree with you on the Soviet side of things, Tim, you know, considering the communist regime there, and you know, there would be no communism if it wasn't for Zionism. So, kind of, like I said, a curveball thought this morning, but, you know, there's so much commingling of these nations that doesn't make any sense, you know, Turkey and Germany and all of these nations that are at least at times friendly with one another. And in these conversations, like you were just saying, Jason, this is what made me start thinking really about bringing it up on air is, you know, these 100% tariffs against countries that buy things from Russia or whatever. Why? You know, why would we hate Russia so much that we're going to do that, you know, and love the Ukraine so much? And I think it just gets down to look at who these countries are aligning with. And I think you can start getting down to the common denominator there of it's not so much, I don't know. I don't know exactly what I'm trying to say as much as there is probably a hatred for Russia from Israel. And that's something that I think I'm going to explore a little bit of why would Israel hate Russia the way they appear to? I don't know.
I mean,
go ahead, Tim.
The escape of grasp to some degree would be one of my thoughts because, you know, you had the Bolsheviks, you had the Zionists and the Marxists in there, and those are all kind of like the same word. I mean, and you don't have that anymore. It's now not only frowned upon, it is absolutely not allowed. They've gone from a godless society to, as near as I can tell, they promote more Christian ideals and support that. They've thrown to my way of thinking, the Muslims are just a lapdog of Judaism. You know what I'm saying? That's and they use that as they trot that out to set it on to attack and then reap the benefit of that attack. So Russia's kicked them out. This is a country that has unapologetically said, now we're not going to play this game. And so I think that there's a lot of, hatred there for that. I mean, Germany tried that and they pay restitution every year and you're not even allowed to say anything bad as far as otherwise you're an anti-Semite and you're going to serve time in jail in Germany, for example. I mean, they've been completely muzzled, hobbled, and brought to heel. And I think that really brings a lot of hatred. I mean, that's just my, destructive hatred at that. So that's kind of my opinion.
And if you look at what we see in Russia and what we have seen, you know, like the gay pride events and that sort of thing, those are forbidden. You're not going to see that in Russia. You know, as a matter of fact, there's very strict laws that are more in accordance with the law, you know, with scriptural law, prohibiting such public displays of such things. You know, Tim, I think you're right. I think if you look at what the agenda of the enemy has been in Western European nations, you know, evidence here in the United States and Canada and all through mainland Europe, the agenda there has been to tear down the church, tear down the family, allow moral decay to take over and rot our people from the inside so that the enemy can easily sweep in and replace our values and replace our culture and our society. Russia has done the opposite of that.
Yes.
Over the last 30 years since the fall of communism there. And maybe that's why it appears, Jason, you know, the 100% tariffs and all of that sort of stuff. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's just a full court press of all of the puppets, the puppet states, these countries that abide by the Zionist playbook. Maybe they're all pointing toward Russia because they're the country that's standing against all of that. They're the largest populated and largest country standing against that. Maybe that's the reason.
That's a good point. Yeah, very possible.
Yeah.
And the other part of that that's sad is, in my opinion, that should be us. But, you know, that's...
Yes.
That should be him. But I'm glad someone is, you know. So, yeah, really, this is it's a cloak of maliciousness that's being used against the kingdom of God is what it amounts to. You know, they...
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, and I saw one of these reports that one of you guys sent over, and... it was talking about the number of casualties that Russia supposedly had taken. And I don't know, I mean, if these numbers are accurate. Do you, any of you guys know that this one said that 42,800 in July? And that just seems like an awful lot.
On the other side of the coin of that, I don't know about that one. But there's a guy that I reference a lot. I know I've referenced him on the show, but he's a guy named Matt Bracken. And I jokingly say, but it's just a little bit of a joke, I think he's the smartest man in America. He gave a statistic. I was listening to a podcast with him this week, and I heard the statistic. And, boy, I jumped on the interwebs because I wanted to fact check that. And he's accurate. So at the beginning of the hostilities between Russia and the Ukraine, the Ukrainian population was somewhere in the neighborhood of about 66 million people.
Wow.
There are less than 20 million. There are less than 20 million people in the Ukraine now.
Huh.
Wow. Currently, they've lost more than 2/3 of their population. Now, that's not all casualties because some of those people just left.
Right.
You know, there was a lot. And that was his point, is one of the things that is not being reported is this war is so unpopular in the Ukraine that the estimations are there's probably about 15 to 20 million people that fled the country because they're not in support of the war. And here is the funny thing. A large number of them fled into Russia.
Really?
And yes. And looking into this, one of the things that we haven't heard here in the United States is there's been a huge humanitarian effort from the nation of Russia, the country of Russia, the government of Russia, in bringing in Ukrainian refugees. And
right,
and that's
right.
Something that no one has heard anything about, you know, that they're supposedly bloodthirsty. They're murdering all these Ukrainians. They've brought in maybe millions of Ukrainians into their country. I don't know an exact number, millions, maybe too much. But yeah, supposedly there's around 20 million Ukrainians that are actually in the Ukraine now. At the start of hostilities, it was about 66 million. And
wow.
So those are the people that have fled the country that are casualties, like you were talking about, Jason. So that's 2/3, a little more than 2/3 of the population are no longer there. That's something.
It really is.
Yeah.
Well, and I think the other thing is, and we talked about this a while back, about the fact that the Ukrainians were, what, hiring mercenaries and using basically press gangs to stock their military with, and, you know, you look at the average age of the Ukrainian military, and I don't have that in front of me right now, but, you know, when you begin to look at these things, that's just a symbol or a sign to me that it's like when you can't get any soldiers, either it's not supported, there's no one left to get, or something's going on, you know, that would create this dearth in people that don't want to take part, you know. So, and the other thing is not necessarily the younger age, but I mean the average age, according to some of the places that I've looked, they're talking about them being close to 45 and 50 year old as the average age for Ukrainian soldiers. So when you see them go extremely young or extremely old, that tells you they're running out of fodder. You know, it's like, we talked to here a while back about them they were allowing basically men into the service, women too, I assume, but, that were basically retirement age individuals. You're talking, you know, 55 to and older. So this is a sign of desperation. I mean, so, I know that, like the National Security Journal, a year ago was talking about, that average age being over 40 years old. I got that pulled back up, but they're now recruiting grandfathers to fight in there. So when we look at that, I mean, as far as I can tell, there's what the Crimea has. They currently have control is with Russia, isn't it? As I understand it.
It is.
So,
yeah.
I mean, Russia's got what they want. That was their stated purpose. Crimean region is ours, you know. So, and so why is this still going on?
So that is a good question, and not just the Crimea, but Russia also has taken back the Donbass territory, which if you go back to the 2014 Minsk agreement, which is, that was the catalyst for all of this, right? Like that was Russia, the international community all agreed that the Crimea and the Donbass belonged to Russia. Those were Russian-speaking people, you know, that was Russia. And then the Ukraine reneged on that. And so Russia went in to reclaim what they considered to be their territories, and they've done that. They have effectively set up control in the Donbass and the Crimea. Depending on who you want to listen to, really the only control center that the Ukraine is fully in control of is Kiev and the immediate area around Kiev. My understanding of just of listening to different sources and reading different sources, once you get out of whatever it may be, 120 kilometers or whatever from Kiev, the Ukrainian government is not really in control of their territory. It may not necessarily be in Russian control, but they don't have troops there. They don't have a military presence there. And the reason being is because they don't have the personnel. So a large swath of their border and their territory are not in anyone's control. So I look at it a couple different ways, Tim. You know, why is this still going on? Is Russia of the mindset that we're just not going to allow this to happen again? So they're going to try to dismantle, because if you listen, like Lavrov, who's essentially the Secretary of State of the Russian government, one of the things he repeatedly says is Vladimir Zelensky is not the legitimate leader of the Ukraine. That and why they're saying that is we've gone through. I think it's two election cycles now where elections were suspended in the Ukraine. And by their constitution, Zelensky should not be the leader. And Lavrov has spoken very openly about they are going to see Zelensky step down and fair elections happen in the Ukraine, because there are a lot of protests. I mean, this is not a favorable war in the Ukraine at all. And I think Russia is trying to get some safeguards there, that a new government will come in that maybe will prevent what happened with the Minsk agreement falling apart from happening again. That's one option. The other option, too, is Vladimir Putin was very adamant about the Ukraine being the ancestral homeland of the Rus people, of the Russian people. And he said it, that he felt like this was a mission from God, that the people of the Ukraine be freed from the tyranny of the decadent West, you know, of to restore the Orthodox Church, to all of the things. It could be that. I don't know, Tim. I really don't. Yeah.
And is that situation so much different than what went on in Venezuela with us? You know, I mean, it's like, it's kind of almost, if you really get down there and detail it out, it looks very similar. I mean, in a lot of ways.
Yep.
So,
a lot of ways. Right.
Yeah. And in the meantime, this is certainly keeping the talk about Israel and Gaza down. What's going on over there? I mean, you don't really hear much about that all of a sudden, you know? So, and we're certainly not hearing anything about the Epstein files to speak of. So. yes, beat that drum. So, anyways, wow, lots of interesting things going on there.
I just wanted to read something real quick from the book "The Gog Magog Alliance" by Jack Moore. And I don't know, we've been talking about Turkey and Asia and the Jews and a lot of different stuff. Let's see here. This is from page 57. Why do Edomites support the Turk-like? Because they are relatives of the Turks and are Turk-like themselves. Jews are from Esau, Edom. Esau wed a Canaanite woman contrary to God's law to hurt his parents through the white line of Japheth's grandson Ashkenaz. Genesis 10:3, 1 Chronicles 1:6. And Ham, who is in turn mixed with Asiatic Sumerians, comes the Ashkenazi Jews, who today make up 90% of Jewry. This white and yellow mixture of Mamasser half-breeds formed the bedrock of the Assyrian and Babylonian empires and express itself in the Jewish Babylonian Talmud, which Jewish authorities today say is the heart blood of Judaism. Dropping on down, this part was kind of interesting too. This is from page 59. Let's see if I can find it. What we call Turkey today was Asia Minor. It was once white. It was the home of the Galatians, who Paul wrote to it in the New Testament. These Galatians were Celtics, bond-like descendants of the fair Chaldeans who were kin to Abraham. Asia Minor was also the home of the Hellenes, a Celtic folk, and Romans who were blonde-like. Yet none of these whites, our kin, i.e. true Semites, live there today. This is because of the Turkish westward drive. They were ethnically cleansed from Asia Minor starting about 1070 AD. This idea of ethnic cleansing is not something that began recently. It's been going on for millenniums. I don't know. I just thought that was interesting.
It is.
It is.
This is and folks, if you want, the book that I'm talking about is the Gog Magog Alliance. It was printed in published in 1999 by Colonel Gordon Jack Moore, and there's a lot of just valuable information. A fantastic book. If you'd like it, I don't know. I got quite a few cases of them sitting here, so. I don't know. I think normally it's $10. If you send a $5 donation, I think that'll cover the shipping on it. Send a couple bucks, request the Gog Magog Alliance, and I'll get one sent off to you.
Yeah, that stuff, the roots run deep. I mean, as far as what's going on in those places. And if you don't understand the history of that and how it happened, it's much more difficult to understand what's going on. Because it seems so, it kind of seems like random things sometimes, and it's not.
Right.
You know, so...
Todd says the stream's been running great for him on his end. So, if anybody else is having issues, let me know. Hopefully it's just, I don't want to say hopefully it's just Warren that's having problems, but hopefully we're not having problems at all.
Hope not. So, a lot of our technology is problematic here lately. Seems like all over different places. So, although some things seem to work just fine, but it's strange how that works.
Well, one of the things that I wanted to say too is why we were talking about all this stuff, this mess going on over there and overseas, is I was in, and this probably falls more into the U.S. news, but I was in our O'Reilly's Auto Parts the other day, and went to pick up some oil, and they did not have any oil. I mean, like, there was no Rotella, there was no Mobil 1, there was none of this. I mean, it was slim pickings, let me tell you what. I know just about everybody that works in there. Went up to the counter, and the manager that was on duty, he comes over and talks to me, and I said, hey, what's the deal with the oil? And he said, it's that Strata Moose garbage that's over there. And he said, I don't think we've seen anything yet. He said, I've had stuff on order. And he's like, I can't get it. He's like, there's this guy, you go talk to the manager over at the North store. He said he had a feeling that it was going to happen. And he ended up loading up on oil and stocking up. So he says the North store has got stuff. So I went up and talked to Tim over there. He's a manager at the North store. And he said, yeah, he said, I had a feeling that this was going to happen, and I had heard rumors of it. So he's like, I just multiplied my order on lubricants. And he's like, my warehouse in the back is full. So, I don't know. He said, get it while you can, though. He said, we're not getting any oil. We're not getting any, anything. And he said that whatever's coming through there, he said, he said it's what they're using to make Lucas oil and hydraulic fluid and everything. And he said that the lubricants are just, and hydraulic fluid, transmission fluid, everything is getting very hard to find. So...
Jason, I'll give you a second witness to that. I got an email from a local Kubota dealership I deal with, and it was just a general email to their customers saying that service prices were going to increase starting the 10th, I think, August 10th. And so I know the owners of the place, and it's not far from where I work. So I actually drove over there and was visiting with the owner, and he said the exact same thing.
Really?
The exact same thing. He said availability of everything, whether it's hydraulic fluid or just, 30 weight oil, grease, everything. He said the availability of it is drying up very, very quickly, and what they are getting available to them, the prices have gone up significantly. He said that's why the email went out, is for that reason. And one of the things that these folks have done for years and years and years is your first 100-hour service is on them. You buy it new from them, and your first 100 hours when you come in, they would do the service for you for free. Well, that went away.
And, oh, wow.
The guy who owns the place actually told me, he said, we have been doing that for 2 decades. And he said, we can't do it now.
Wow.
The prices of everything has gone up so much. He said, it was a break-even kind of proposition for him, and he said it's now, you know, we'll go in the hole every month if we do that.
Dang. So, okay. Well, yeah, I'm glad we got that out there. I mean, it's like,
yeah.
Yeah, and
I can hear it.
Go ahead, Tim.
Similar stories here. I mean, that's all I was going to say. Yeah. So we've seen some limits on 5-gallon bucket purchases or pails and stuff like that as well. So,
well, one of the and that's, I guess it, that kind of almost just ties into a prepper tip of the week. But you know, if you need anything like that, if you service your vehicles or do any of your own service, you know, definitely now is the time to stock up. And I'll tell you what, we've got, I mean, our Tractor Supply and different places like that, they still got, the prices haven't increased a lot. I think that they're going to. And I mean, I see that coming around the corner. I'll tell you what, though, we've talked about, you know, the Seafoam. And I went to pick up a gallon of Seafoam the other day, and I couldn't believe how the, how much the price on that stuff has went up. I mean, it just, I mean, it was nuts.
Yeah. Go ahead, Tim.
I agree. Same here. I didn't buy a gallon, but I bought several pints or whatever those, I think those are 16-ounce cans or 12-ounce, but same difference. I was like, wow, okay. So, yeah.
I got a question for you, Tim. What was the price for a bottle, for the 16-ounce bottle?
I think it was like $12 or $13.
Okay, same here.
Of it.
So the Tractor Supply I deal with most, $8.99 has been that way for years and years and years.
Yes.
$12.99 for the same for the same bottle of Seafoam. It went up $4.
Yeah, exactly. Here, that's, you know, that's almost 40% increase. So
yep.
Same. I was gonna buy four, I only bought two type thing. It's going, we could buy. But lots of issues with all of that when you look at it. And they're continuing. And my question is, and this is kind of a rant, but you know, we have all this light sweet crude, which is the best there is for gas and diesel, and your lighter weight motor oil's up to about 50 weight, but we're shipping that all overseas. It all goes. Mm-hmm. It all goes out. We don't keep any of it here. We don't refine any of it here. We ship that out, trade it for sour crude, and then put all the energy and effort into sour crude, which is heavyweight stuff. And then they ship it back in, and we pay a premium price for it as motor oil, fuel, and gas. I don't know about anybody else, but that just seems like a conspiracy of some type to me, or at least it's a very self-deprecating financial model, you know, when you look at it. Why? But there you go.
Exactly. Well,
I want to talk about national defense and everything, you know, and national security. Isn't that kind of a smart build to be able to? Energy's a very hard to negotiate thing if you don't have any. So yep. Ask the European nations. So right now, anyways, but just 2 cents.
Yeah, I agree. Well, let's take a break. We're just about to the top of the hour, and we'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Behind you, were you walking in your sleep, or were you just Baker. I'm the guy that used to date your little sister. I'm the resistor. Now you can spin your little stories till nobody will believe you anymore. And you can plot your death schemes and say it isn't what it means, but let me tell you what it means. This means
And we are back. Well, where would you guys like to go next?
Tim brought up the Epstein files, and I just wanted to throw this out. I don't know if you guys heard about this or not, but have you heard about the state of New Mexico suing the federal government?
I heard a brief deal. Yes, I did. But I don't know anything about it. So, what's going on there?
The state of New Mexico, this is where Epstein's ranch, it was a 7,500-acre, very creepy place there in New Mexico. And that's where a lot of these search warrants, a lot of the things that we've heard about, the just terrible things that they found, it was found there in New Mexico. And so the state of New Mexico had their own investigation going because this is a republic, and the federal government doesn't really have any purview there, is kind of what they're claiming. And they're saying, you know, that their own state police and their own authorities had an investigation going into this. And the Attorney General of New Mexico gave a July 31st deadline to the Department of Justice to release the Epstein files to them so that they could continue on with their criminal investigation. And things that are being alleged is, you know, there was a lot of staff working at this ranch. You know, there were hired hands and maids and gardeners and just all sorts of people that could be complicit in the crimes that happened there. And they needed those files, those emails to do a thorough investigation. Well, the federal government is refusing to give those to the state of New Mexico. They will not. So there's all the things you're supposed to have, right? There's duly signed subpoenas and search warrants from judges in New Mexico requesting this for criminal investigation. And the administration, the Trump administration, will not give those files over to the state of New Mexico.
Hmm. Wow. Yeah. Talk about a can of worms.
The Attorney General, Raul Torres, I think it is, is spearheading that. And the lawsuit, I kind of looked through the lawsuit, and I think they requested the Epstein files, and the DOJ provided them with 31 pages. And Torres's allegation in the lawsuit said that the name, which I'm not sure how he gets that out of there if he doesn't have it, but the words Zorro Ranch appear in the Epstein files over 13,000 times. So, you know, that's a it's an interesting there was a lot of really bad stuff going on down there, at least from what I can see. So
my understanding, Tim, is that what the federal government gave to the Attorney General, those handful of pages or whatever, they were redacted. It wasn't even like complete. So they were redacted copies. Well, that doesn't happen. You know, when if you got one jurisdiction or one government giving it to another government for criminal investigation purposes, you get unredacted files. That's how you do an investigation. And, the DOJ gave him redacted versions, so he doesn't even have complete files with names and so forth. I mean, it sure seems like they're hiding something, like they're covering it up.
Yeah, it's called discovery for a reason, right? Yeah,
exactly. That's right. That's exactly right.
So, yeah, the whole thing is, and it's just amazing how, I mean, there's kind of a dearth of information as regards that in the national news. That is, in my mind at least, this is probably one of the biggest smoking guns probably in the world right now. I mean, if you look at it, it affects the entire global international scene, and very little being said about it. You can just tell by what's going on that what they'd really like is everybody to just forget about it. You know, what they talk about anything but that. You know, so and of course, it's really evil and heinous, and it's just messy, and it is a human condition to not want to bring any of that out. Nobody wants to dwell on it or think about it. It's horrific, but that's the very reason it needs to be addressed, is so that it stops happening. And that's the other thing I think a lot of people have in their mind, that, well, since this all came, now it's done. And it's like, no, these things are still going on. People are still missing. People are still being blackmailed. People are still being manipulated through the use of this, if not these files, which I doubt. I mean, I'm sure they are. But if not through that, then through similar processes that are still ongoing. I mean, the names may have changed, but the game is the same. You know, so, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah.
I wonder, what will they do next? I mean, if they just refuse to give it over to them, I mean, are they to the point where they're going to go try to arrest some people?
Here's the thing. I mean, they could, right? I mean, who are you going to arrest? Who do you get an arrest warrant for? You know, if it's obstruction, who's your... So if they try to prefer criminal charges against somebody, is it the clerk that's not releasing this, or is it the Attorney General of the United States? You know, it's kind of funny to me that we all know the bad old days or the good old days, depending on how you want to look at them. Think of the Patriot Movement and everything we experienced, right, going through that and looking at that. Well, this is sort of the same thing when you really look at it. You know, it may be a Republican in office, And there may be a lot of MAGA people that are, you know, crying conservatism and that sort of thing. But in full disclosure, the Attorney General of New Mexico is a Democrat, I believe. But should it matter? Isn't this the kind of the same stuff that we saw under like the Clinton administration and the Obama administration of, if we don't like what you're asking for, we're just not going to do it. That's exactly what's happening right now with the Department of Justice. They don't want New Mexico looking into Jeffrey Epstein. So they're just going to stonewall him and not do it because it's rules for thee and rules for me. When you really look at it, this is no different. What the Trump administration is doing is no different than the Clinton administration when Janet Reno was the Attorney General and ran the Department of Justice very similarly. I mean, this is the same tactics. We've just changed the names of the people who occupy the offices. Am I wrong, Tim? What do you think about that?
No, I agree wholeheartedly. I mean, they've already tried to disappear them. You know, if you look back at the Pam Bondi situation with the Epstein files and different things like that, it was like, oh yeah, this is just a nothing burger. You know, I mean, and it was like, and then somehow they, you know, got released or there was more information came out on the, on a sidebar or something. But the point is, they just, when you make the rules, if you don't like what's going on, you just change the rules. And that seems to be the way they work. That's their method of operation in these things. And, I think we're seeing that go on all the time.
I would almost say this is, Jason, almost kind of I'll use the phrase, it's almost a constitutional crisis. And when you look at the 10th Amendment of the United States, New Mexico is completely in their right on this. You know, there's the allegations of child rape and torture and child trafficking and all sorts of stuff that probably went through that ranch in New Mexico. Well, all of those crimes fall under the umbrella of the state of New Mexico. They have, because of federalism and the way our republic is supposed to work, New Mexico has venue there to investigate all of these crimes. This is not a federal matter. It happened in their backyard. And they are duly authorized under the Constitution of the United States and their own Constitution in New Mexico to have venue in this. They should be allowed to investigate crimes that happen in their state. And you have the federal Department of Justice just not cooperating. They're not going to allow New Mexico access to this evidence. Like what Tim was talking about with discovery earlier, it's very hard to investigate allegations of crimes when you're not allowed to review the evidence. And that's what the federal government is not allowing New Mexico to do.
So, so how does that work? Let's say that they're doing an investigation on Epstein's ranch there in New Mexico. Wouldn't there be a local sheriff's department or somebody from the state there partaking in the investigation? Or did, when the feds came in and took it over, did they just kick everybody else out and take all the evidence?
Yeah, so what you find, and Tim, I'm sure you'll help me explain this. What you find and what we have found, and I'll go back to Janet Reno and all of that sort of stuff that was happening back 30, almost 40 years ago now. There is something that we hear a lot called the Supremacy Clause. And It is a difficult explanation, but I'll give you the federal government's explanation. If we say it's ours, it's ours. And
okay.
That's what they do. Is so when you the good point, Jason, that you just made is if all of this is New Mexico, right, like this all happened in New Mexico, whether it's murders or rapes or whatever the case may be, you would think that this is New Mexico's, right? Like this belongs to New Mexico. The Mann Act is a federal law that says if you move a human being from one state to the other to commit a felony like kidnapping or trafficking for humans or whatever, then that is a federal crime. The problem here is this. That piece of the moving a human from one state to the other, that is a federal crime. The crimes that occur in the state that you move the human to, whether it be rape or murder or whatever, those are state crimes. What the feds come in and do is say, because there was a kidnapping that involved moving a human from state to state, they now get it all. That the Supremacy Clause says that they can take over the entire investigation, which is bullcrap. That is not what the Supremacy Clause is there for. Now, the feds certainly can come in and investigate their piece of it, which would be the interstate trafficking of human beings. But the local crimes, the state crimes that occur, whether it be the rapes or the murders or whatever, that is still the venue of the state. And what we have allowed the federal government to do for many, many years now is to come in and say, and I'm going to give you the reason why here in just a second, we've allowed them to come in and say, all of this belongs to us, even though they don't have the venue for it. And the reason why, Jason, you mentioned the local sheriff's offices or the state police or whatever, is because then they could pass the hot potato.
Right.
They don't have to investigate it. If they give everything to the Fed, they can wash their hands and say,
it's a federal investigation.
It's a federal investigation. We don't have to comment on it. We don't have to do anything with it. And that's the sad state of affairs. Tim, I don't know if I missed anything there, but the Supremacy Clause is widely misused.
Yeah. It was originally designed for jurisdictional cooperation across state lines.
Yeah.
So that, say, I don't know, and you hit the nail right on the head. I mean, great summary. I can't see anything. It doesn't negate the authority of that state to prosecute crimes that were committed in their state. It obviously, New Mexico can't prosecute crimes that happened in, say, Colorado, because they're not Colorado, but that gave the Fed purview to handle it maybe across three states or four states, and it gave them some recourse. But, you know, the state was still, the state still bears the ability to prosecute for what happened in their state. So it's kind of like, I liken it to, you know, criminal charges versus a private charge for damages or something like that. You have, you know, there's two levels of prosecutable offenses there. I mean, obviously, it's just one of those things. We've seen that, and instead it has become that the Fed has all this power. I mean, actually, they don't. They have power in the areas where they have power, but the states have, their soil is their soil. Each state is like its own, what do you want to call it? Fiefdom or its own
sovereign,
you know.
They're a sovereign state.
Yeah, and they definitely have full power and authority to detect, prosecute, and operate for items that occurred on their soil. And it has become they've watered it down, washed it out, and used it for just like things like this. The Fed comes in, they take it, they disappear it. Now what? You know, and
that's right.
So, yeah, that's what we're seeing.
There's a greater civics lesson here that I'll just throw out for just 2 minutes. There is a reason why, you know, there's the United States Constitution, and we often say things like that's the supreme law of the land and that sort of thing. But as a reminder, every state in this country, whether it be a commonwealth or a state, whatever the case may be, has their own individual constitution. Nebraska has a constitution. Colorado has a constitution. Texas has a constitution. And inside those constitutions, there are amendments and articles, just like the United States Constitution. Now, the deal on that is you can't make a constitution that is contrary to the United States Constitution. So that is why the United States Constitution is called the supreme law of the land. It is, you can add to, but you can't take away from the U.S. Constitution. Case in point, and we can get into this in just a second, the Second Amendment of the Constitution, it ensures that the citizenry has the right to bear arms. All constitutions in the United States, the state constitutions, somewhere in them say that we can bear arms because it's the supreme law of the land. So you can't have the state of Arkansas outright banning private ownership of firearms. For people that are listening, you need to understand there is like traffic law, criminal code of procedures, penal code. They're all different in all 50 states because we are set up with state lawmakers, legislators that create law for our states. And it is not a federal murder statute. It's not a federal rape statute. It's the state of Colorado, state of Nebraska, state of Texas. Because the way the founders of our country designed our government is who knows best how to govern themselves. And it's the people of the state. And we create laws and we enforce laws that resemble the culture and the people of the states. And what the feds have done is when they choose that they don't like what's happening in the state, they will step in and say, supremacy clause, we're taking this over. And what you have is weak-minded, cowardly state leaders that allow it to happen instead of doing the right thing and claiming that 10th Amendment protection in the Constitution and saying, you know what, DOJ, we're good. We don't need your help. We can do this.
Yeah, we got this.
we got this, you know, and that has happened for entirely too long. So that's just a little quick civics lesson on all that crap.
Yep. Good point.
Speaking of all of that, what do you think about the NFA?
Ha, 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 ha. Boy, there's some serious, and it's kind of low key, isn't it? I mean,
it is.
It's they're sure working on making it go away. It seems like. I mean, it continues to.
Before we get go to that though, I just I don't know. I just got been texting back and forth with Norman in Nebraska, and he is having website issues. I don't know if we did update the website. I know it's working good here. If you are having issues with this, he's listening in on the call-in line. Try dumping your cache, refreshing your browser. Maybe that's what's causing the issue. I don't know, but check it out I don't know. Yeah, let me know. Give me some feedback on it because we're trying to get these issues figured out, and I'm not sure what the problem people are having. Also, I guess, let me know what browser you're using. That would be helpful, too. I don't know. Tim, is it working good for you?
I haven't checked it this morning, but it was okay yesterday. So,
okay.
I did do a check last night about 7-8 o'clock, and everything was feeding fine.
Huh, okay.
But I don't really know past that. I was in kind of a rush this morning. I actually had it on my list, but I didn't get to it. So.
Yeah, because I know it's working good here, and I don't know, and I've got redundancy on everything. I don't know. But we're working on it.
I'll check out off the air and let you know. So.
Yeah, I just checked here, audio stream's working fine from the website.
Yeah, it's working fine here, too. I don't know. Okay, well, yeah, do let me know. Shoot me an email or let me know if you have an issue. So we'll try to get it figured out. We want to get this figured out as soon as possible. Yeah, let's go back to the NFA. Well, I don't like the NFA, you know, but... It is. It seems like they are getting a lot of heat, and hopefully, you know, we'll be able to get that beat. I've seen that just recently that this judge shot down and said basically, he said if they did away, since they did away with the $200 tax stamp for suppressors, short barreled rifles, short barreled shotguns, that there's no need for a registry anymore. So. That would be awesome.
And the registry was our registry is illegal according to their own documentation over the years. So they were the whole thing is. I mean, if you really get into this and study it, a little bit of information on it, it's interesting that your registration. They didn't call it a registration. They called it a receipt. You know, I mean, You paid the tax, and that was your receipt. Well, of course, receipts have to be tracked, and licenses have to be tracked. So you're that's how they did that. But it amounted to the same thing as the registry, except they bought it off on the fact that you were paying something for it. So when they rescinded the $200 tax, there was no longer any need for a receipt, quote-unquote, registration. So they've maintained this registration, despite the fact that they're, so it's illegal. And that's basically, I think that kind of, isn't that kind of the summary of what this judge said?
Was 100%.
That? I mean, yeah. So,
yeah. I think what's great is, I mean, you stop and think about, you know, we often talk about the good old gun show days and all of that, but think about how many times did you hear something like, it's just a backdoor registry. It's just a backdoor registry, you know, like it's not about the tax stamp. It's just about the backdoor registry. Well, that's pretty much what this federal judge in North Texas said. I mean, that's that what he said is what we have said for the last ever how many dozens of years is what the NFA did was to create a registry. And if you remove the tax receipt part of this, then you have a registry, which is unconstitutional. So I think it's wonderful. So the next shoe to drop, I'm going to make a prediction here, is this. If this upholds, if this continues forward, which it looks like it will, and remember who the parties are here, there's a whole group of folks that sued, you know, Gun Owners of America, the NRA, ILA, Silence Co., and different companies that they sued. And who they sued was the federal government, the Department of Justice. So where we're at now is we're in a 14-day period where the Department of Justice can appeal this ruling. And then it can go back for further inspection and potentially end up in the Supreme Court. So the question is going to become, does Trump's Department of Justice appeal this? And politically, what would the optics look like on that, right? That you have the Trump administration arguing that suppressors should be controlled. I don't know how that will play out politically, but I think in the end, it will be in the affirmative, and we will see the NFA disappear. And my understanding is the short-barreled rifles and short-barreled shotguns will then fall under the 4473 forms, where you just do the background form and get the weapon. And I believe suppressors will not require a form at all, is probably how it's going to shake out. But hear me out on this. If this ruling stands as this federal judge in North Texas wrote the opinion, that without a tax, you're creating a registry, how long before someone sues and says, the 4473 form is also a registry.
Yeah.
Because by ATF rule, those can't be destroyed. And the dealer has to hold on to them forever. And if he goes out of business, where do they go? Well, they have to go to the ATF. So on the 4473 form, the dealer is writing down all of your information, plus the make, model, serial number, caliber of whatever you just purchased. That's a registry. So if we get the legal precedent here that without a tax, you create a registry, there is no tax on the 4473 form.
Right.
And how long before somebody catches wise and says, if it's no good with the NFA, then it's no good with the 4473?
Exactly. Good point.
Yeah. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah. I'm also excited about the way the Commerce Clause plays into this, because the Fed has really been beating the drum on this Commerce Clause thing, and it's too big to really go into here, but just to touch on it, you know, they're trying to say that because it's commerce and it crosses state lines, it's kind of like what we just talked about with the New Mexico thing, that the Fed has purview over it because of that. And it's like, wait a minute, the states are allowed to associate and trade amongst each other and without federal interference or federal issue or without paying the Fed a fee. So, I think Will said it at one point, but the Commerce Clause is the big house of cards. You kick one thing out and the whole thing comes down, and it affects probably every aspect of our daily lives is affected by the Commerce Clause, which is, trust me, it makes no sense in most ways. I mean, you look at it and go, how does that work?
So much of that stuff doesn't make sense. I mean, it's like, just the way that they use words on stuff. I mean, you can have a short-barreled shotgun, SBS, and then they came out with, how many years ago was it? 5, 6, 7 years ago when they came out with, you could get a short-barreled shotgun, but it wasn't considered a shotgun. It was considered a firearm, and that was legal, and you didn't need to do any of the extra paperwork, and you didn't need to pay the $200 tax stamp. But I'll tell you what, it was the exact same thing. It was a short-barreled pistol shotgun. And, you know, they went back and forth, and it's like, you know, and it's the same thing with a brace on an SBR. It's like, is it a pistol or is it a rifle? There's no difference. I mean, the parts are interchangeable. It's absolutely ridiculous what they're doing.
In legalese, in the legal word, in the legal world, Jason, what you're describing is there's a phrase called arbitrary and capricious. And this is an affirmative legal argument that it gets made of when you make these rules that are arbitrary and capricious, they're not rules at all. And no one can follow them. You shouldn't have to follow them.
Yeah.
And if you look at the ATF, three-quarters of these rules that the ATF have made, they're all arbitrary rules. Like, it makes no sense. Like you say, I can buy a 14-inch barrel. It's legal all day, right? Like, I can cut an 18.5-inch barrel down to 12 inches. I just can't put it on the receiver of a firearm. Well, that doesn't make any sense. That's all arbitrary. Like, you know, that... So I think what's going to happen, I'm hoping what's going to happen is, there was a time that the BATFE existed under the Department of Treasury, and they had no enforcement authority at all. They were only regulatory, and I hope that this is a real good move towards that. And I don't know if you guys think that or not. I don't know if we'll ever live in a world where there is no such thing as ATF enforcement agents or not, but it seems like we're whittling away at the things that they exist for. You know, like if short-barreled rifles become lawful, which it appears they are going to, what's next? I really am hopeful that that you're going to see the. I think we're going to see the background process change for purchasing firearms. I really believe this.
I think so, too.
Yeah, I do, too. I think that, and really, let's be honest, if you look at it, you know, we're kind of numbers guys sometimes. You've got millions and millions of rounds of ammo in the United States, and you've got millions of guns in the United States. And if there was a problem here, you'd know it. I mean, that's kind of a common meme here out there. This is not an issue. And what's the difference between a short-barreled rifle and a handgun? You can have a handgun, but, you know, an SBR is illegal and will get you jail time. But it's got a longer barrel than my handgun does, and it may be or may not be in the same caliber. It's no less or no more of an issue than anything else. It's strictly a money and control issue. You know, it's like, oh, wow, we can manipulate the system to gain control or power or authority. And how many people's lives have been destroyed over some? I mean, go back to Randy Weaver, for crying out loud. Whether you have a shotgun that's a quarter of an inch shorter than it should be, or a half of an inch, and your child and your wife and your life is destroyed for some stupid thing like that. Did he do anything wrong with it? No. It was strictly an administrative issue, and as a consequence of it, total destruction of a person's, of everything. So these things are, I don't know, my way of thinking, is the dumbest thing I ever heard of. Let's just put it that way. It's like,
they're also by design, Tim. I mean, they're preparatory offenses or master key offenses, depending on how you want to look at them. And they're so arbitrary and obscure, they don't make sense, that nobody really can abide by them, right? And that's by design.
Exactly.
You know, like you're describing, I can have an AR pistol that fires the exact same round as a full-size AR, but if I shorten the barrel of my AR so that it's longer than the barrel of the pistol, but it's too short to be a rifle, I've committed a felony. And you look at those things that they just don't make any sense, and they don't make any sense for a reason, because they're preparatory offenses or master key offenses that open the door for them to step in and pull a Randy Weaver on. I mean, that's why they exist. I'm sick of it, and hopefully this is a good move towards preventing that in the future. We'll see.
This is just a side note, but I was reading a story the other day, and it was about, and it was in Nevada, and some county outside of, I think it was in Reno, outside of Reno. And there was a guy that was out shooting, and they sent the sheriff's department out there. The sheriff's department, during their investigation, they figured out that this guy had a SBR in his vehicle. So they charged him with a felony for an SBR. What is that? So is there state laws and federal laws that
in some states?
Okay, that's what I was curious, because I checked, some states don't have anything. I mean, an SBR isn't a state crime, and I was trying to figure out how a sheriff's department would charge this guy with a felony, but it must have been on a state level also. Okay, that makes sense.
In some states, because state legislators are lazy oftentimes, in some states what they do is they adopt a section of their penal code for prohibited weapons, and it's just the federal.
Okay.
It's the same thing as the federal guidelines. Yeah.
Gotcha.
And it gives the power of the state cops to enforce that. And then you have some states like Vermont that don't have any weapons laws at all.
Wow! Yeah,
which is pretty much the very definition of the Second Amendment, when it says "shall not infringe." I
mean, to be 100%, Tim. I've often said Vermont has great skiing, great maple syrup, and great gun laws. I don't know about everything else, but those three things they got.
Let's go to the phone lines. Hello, caller.
Morning, gentlemen.
Hey, Kevin.
Hey, Kevin.
Will, Jason, thanks for another excellent pack of information. Everybody should get to listen to people.
Well, I'm glad you think so.
Yeah, I wish
you would tell my wife that.
Oh, boy.
Oh.
I want to go. Can I go over some things I've gleaned over this week? The last one about this AR-15 being a pistol or a rifle. I had a friend give me a pistol that was an AR-15.
Well, that was a good friend.
Yeah, they produced them, and I tried to get a gunsmith to work on that for me. But what I ended up doing, I traded it to a friend of mine for a Beretta shotgun, and then he turned it. He's a non-vet, real good gun guy. He turned it into a full-sized AR-15. Did all kinds of updates on it and things. In the last strikes on Kyiv, there were no Patriot missiles left to defend them. That's what Hal Turner's reporting. You know, they had nothing left. My longtime Ukrainian friends are telling me that the total corruption in the country is just gone bizarre. They flaunt their new cars and all the money, all the showy stuff showing they have money. And about the New Mexico investigation, did you see where Florida now wants to investigate Fauci and bring?
Yeah, I did.
Yep. That's really great. Three or four months ago, Hal Turner was reporting that Walmart and Costco were no longer going to get prepackaged oil products. That's coming to truth. And you see about the Air Force general being stripped of all of his security clearance and all that. Did you read about that?
No. What was that about?
Yeah, he's that leaker that. When Trump went to Turkey, I believe, is he went on a new Air Force One, and then he leaked that.
Was that the Frank Kendall? Was that who you're?
I think that's Frank Kendall. Yeah, and he leaked that there was no protection on that new Air Force One, so he had to return in. The old Air Force One, and he was a Biden-era person. And I was listening to an Alex Jones interview with the top investigator or whatever talk show host in Russia, and all he kept talking about was who's running the world. Is it Palantir? They're not going away.
A good question. Yeah.
And also, I found out that Russia can produce their munitions for 7% of what we pay. So, where's all that money going? You know?
That's been my question for a little bit. Where is all that? Where did all that money go? You know, I mean, how are we out of missiles and out of this all of a sudden? Yeah, they ought to be rack, pack, and stack. So
yes, yeah, they should.
Yeah,
yeah. And then Hal was also reporting that that we sold a bunch of F-35s to the Middle Eastern countries, and they all went. None of them had radar because there was a rare earth problem, and they didn't want to give it away. You know. What we have left, and that's really where's the money. And then I really have trouble cleaning the bugs off my front license plate. my brother used to be an AMSOIL dealer. I counted on him. You know, he supplied me with everything. I don't change my own oil anymore. I tried looking that up. I really need to clean these plugs off. Can you tell me the products that would do that for me?
There's a couple of products out there. AMSOIL makes something called Mudslinger, M-U-D-S-L-I-N-G-E-R. It's about $13, $14 a can. You can order it directly from AMSOIL. And then, Jason, correct me if I'm wrong on the other one, but it's Rust-Oleum makes a product that's Rust-Oleum Reflective.
Yep.
And you want to get the semi-gloss, low-gloss.
Semi-transparent clear is what they call it, yeah.
Yeah. Also about $13 a can.
Semi-transparent.
Clear, yep. And clear. I mean, I got mine clear. Off of the Evil Empire Amazon and had it the next day.
They're out of stock now on Amazon.
They are?
They're not shipping. Yeah. But I will tell you who, if you got an Ace Hardware nearby, Kevin, they carry it and they have it in their supply network so they can get it for you.
The Mudslinger?
No, the Rust-Oleum.
The Rust-Oleum.
Yeah.
The Rust-Oleum. Yeah. I think our tractor supply has it on the shelf.
Okay.
Okay.
Here. That may not be the case everywhere, but, you know. Anyway,
yeah.
The number on it, too, is sometimes it's kind of hard to find, but it's the 214-944.
All right. Yeah. I want to be sure and get that. You know,
well,
lastly,
clean
too,
is keen, man.
Yep, that's right.
And last thing, you also mentioned EMP protection. And nobody talks about EMPs anymore, do they?
No.
No.
It gets talked about here occasionally.
I'm putting my phone in my Faraday backpack when I drive around now. I just have to. I'm gonna be a good citizen.
We have some vehicle ECMs in Mylar bags, just in case, to make sure they're protected correctly and put down in a way that will protect them, you know, just in case something weird happens.
Oh, yeah. So you say a Mylar bag inside of something else?
Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but so my... A Mylar bag inside of like a metal ammo can sitting on the ground is a fairly decent way to, you know, protect some of that stuff.
Yep.
So that's kind of what we do with those, we have some of those put down that way just in case. So it's a cheap maybe.
We have walkie-talkies and things like that inside a metal trash can, just in case.
There you go.
I'll use some of these kind of good ideas for a good citizen as I go on.
That's right.
And thank you for a bunch of great information. Everybody should have to listen to you guys' information.
Well, thanks for calling, Kevin. We appreciate it.
Yeah, enjoyed it.
Have a good weekend. Bye. Always good to hear from Kevin.
Yes.
Well, we got about 10 minutes left. What do you guys want to touch on next?
I got something funny.
Okay.
I just want to pass on because we talk about serious stuff all the time, and even though we cut up with one another, this really has made me laugh. For the last 24 hours, I just wanted to share it with everybody. So I don't know anything about professional basketball. Like, it's not something that I'm remotely interested in. But this came across, and I just wanted to pass it on. So there is a women's professional basketball league. It's the WNBA, okay? And so wherever there's a men's professional team, Los Angeles, Denver, Portland, wherever, there is a female counterpart, a woman's counterpart, right? And in that city. And as you can expect, it's a lot of liberalism and, you know, American-hating kind of pro-sports mentality. Well, I guess in the last several weeks, there has been, I don't even really know what to say, a lot of talk within the Women's National Basketball Association about protecting queer and trans rights. And so these female basketball players have been wearing T-shirts like, you know, trans children are deserve love too. Just nonsense, the typical nonsense stuff. So there's been a couple of coaches that have come out and taken this real strong stance towards trans rights. There have been female basketball players that have come out and said, we wouldn't mind if trans players enter into the Women's National Basketball Association. They're people too. Okay. There's a guy named Enes Kanter. He is a retired NBA basketball player who is Turkish. He retired 2 years ago. He is 34 years old. He is 6'10" and weighs 275 pounds. And yesterday he held a press conference announcing his intention to enter the Women's National Basketball Association League.
Jeez.
Now, he's doing it as a joke, and he openly said, I'm calling their bluff. If you really think that this is the way it should be, I'm entering the draft, and I will play on any women's basketball team in the country, and show you why there's a difference between men and women. I think that's hilarious. I don't know about you guys, but I think it's funny that this giant, 6'10", 275 pounds, is calling out the bluff of these women and pretty much saying, if y'all don't know the difference, I'll come on the basketball court and show you the difference. Yeah, that's I don't think he's going to get signed by one of these women's teams, but I thought that was fun.
Well, and a lot of it that stemmed from that Sophia Cunningham. So she's athlete in the same organization, and she has been very vocal last couple weeks. She came out and said she's there to protect young girls in the locker room. She opposes biological men competing in women's sports and says it's common sense to bar trans athletes, while insisting she does not hate trans people. Anyway, she's come out, been very vocal against that, and they really tried to crucify her over that. She's getting a lot of people that are supporting her, which is good. In response to that, the WNBA, they came out and said, you know, we embrace justice, equality, diversity, and inclusion. And basically they're going to include everybody. And that's why this, this dude is like, okay, if that's what you're going to do, then I'm going to join. So,
wow.
Yep.
I thought it was funny too. I mean, it's like, and it's just, I mean, it, and like, you know, this girl says it's just common sense. I mean, you got these guys that are saying, okay, I'm a girl and I'm going to go play on the women's team. And I mean, you talk about there's all kinds of stuff and they're trying to cover it up, but these girls are just horrified when, you know, one of these guys walks into the locker room. And, you know, I mean, it's perverted.
Yeah,
it
is totally.
We're definitely off of our regular range. We don't normally talk about professional basketball, but there's a guy. His name's Clay Travis. He hosts a podcast, and again, the guy's independently wealthy. He put up a bounty this week in relation to what you're talking about, Jason, with all of this WNBA stuff. And his challenge was this. He said, I will put $10 million on the line. Any women's basketball team, one of these professional women's basketball teams, he said, I will put $10 million on the line if they will play a championship boys high school basketball team from anywhere in the country. So he said, a professional women's team versus a state champion boys team, $10 million. And he said, this is how it'll work. If the boys team wins, I give $10 million to the school. If the women's win, if they win, I give $10 million to them that they can give to their favorite charity. I don't care what the charity is. Not one team has taken the bait.
Yeah.
Do you think they will?
No, I don't.
No,
I don't either.
Well, yeah. Well, and I thought it was, I think it's interesting that Sophie Cunningham, I kind of admire her. I don't watch sports at all to speak of, but I've seen some of this come up and I've kind of taken a tick up in interest in the whole thing. But the whine is that the WNBA, no one really follows it. You know, they suffer from a lack of interest, but it's a necessity in our administrative society today for this to exist. But since she's gotten involved in it and really taken up the point that she's taken up, the viewership of any game that they're involved in has gone way up. So
yep.
It's like, well, people do like a show. So, you know, it's like, wow. But definitely interesting situation there.
Yes, exactly. Well, guys, we are out of time.
Well, thanks.
Thanks for being here, man. Thank you, Remnant.
You bet.
And Lord willing, we'll be back next week. Join us for church tomorrow by going to scripturesforamerica.org, sfaw.org. And if you're having issues with the website, please reach out to me. Let me know. We're trying to get stuff figured out. Todd's been very helpful. He's working on that. I got him in touch with one of the gentlemen that was having problems today, and he's troubleshooting that right now. So I appreciate that, but there is, need to know if you're having issues, and, Lord willing, we'll see you tomorrow at church.
Once a man's home was his castle, only his foes would violate. And the border of his property was the moat round his estate. All these kingly rights of sovereignty, once bestowed on us by God, have been lost somewhere in history, in the fine print and the fraud. Once a man and his religion was protected by the law. In America, the Constitution formed a verbal wall. Now the law that used to separate is a law that's daily breached. Now the worried watchman on the wall is crying, heaven's under siege. Heaven's under siege. Woe now, heaven's under siege. When the Bible and the Bill of Rights have been trampled in the streets. And when the gentle lambs of Jesus Christ brought in